listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, we find out about a new history project that's capturing the stories of Milwaukeeans who marched in the open housing marches 50 years ago. First, it's time for our weekly review of state news. Wisconsin high schoolers finished up a four-day march to Janesville this week to advocate for stricter gun control laws. A new law in Wisconsin changes where sex offenders can live after they leave prison. And one paper mill in the Fox Valley is coming back to life after shutting down last year. Robert Menser is a statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He's based in Wausau. Rob, great to have you back.
Hey, thanks.
So let's start with the student gun march. A couple weeks ago, we saw high school students around the country demonstrating for stricter gun laws in the wake of the Parkland, Florida school shooting. One group of students in Wisconsin took things a step further this week. Tell us about the 50 Miles More march.
Sure. 50 Miles More was a group of, it turned out to be about 40 or 50 students who marched from Madison to Janesville to sort of extend that that March for Our Lives protest. They said that they were inspired by Martin Luther King Jr.'s march from Selma to Montgomery, which was about 50 miles or so, and they're calling on other groups, teens, students to do the same in their state.
Let's take a listen to Brendan Fardella, one of the students, talking about why they took the march.
We want to keep it going, want to keep it in the news cycle, keep people empowered and passionate for as long as we can until there's common sense gun reform, or until we get to November and all of these politicians are up for re-election and we vote them out if they don't do anything.
Rob, in terms of getting that news attention that Brendan Fardella talked about and making their movement visible, do you think the march was a success?
You know, I think a wild success, right? And it's a common thread with the responses to the Parkland school shootings. Just how savvy the activists have been about keeping their message central in the media. I mean, it's interesting on its own. They generated tons of social media response and traditional media coverage, but they have a nice website. They had Twitter feeds and Instagram feeds, and sort of gave people a sense that they were able to participate or support these kids if they connected with their message.
So they marched from Madison to Janesville. Why was Janesville their destination?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's this fellow in Janesville who holds a little bit of political power named Paul Ryan. So they wanted to make the point by ending their march in near the office of the Speaker of the House, who is Paul Ryan, and to make the case that politicians need to do more on gun control.
And what demands were the students making specifically?
Yeah, they have a list of specific policies. They want bans on bump stocks, the devices that allow a rifle to fire many more rounds more quickly. They want legal purchasing age for guns to be raised to 21 from 18. They want background checks on all gun sales. And they say they want a ban on military-style weapons and weapons of war, which, of course, those terms themselves are the subjects of debate.
Well, Rob, let's move on to another topic, one that we touched on a few weeks ago. We talked about some backlash over a sex offender being housed in a remote area of Forest County. That individual wasn't living in Forest County prior to his incarceration. Now there's a bipartisan bill signed into law by the governor that changes housing for sexual offenders. What would this bill do?
Sure. So this is a little complicated, but to understand it, so basically under Wisconsin has a class of offenders known as sexually violent people. This is a legal distinction. A judge can declare someone to be a sexually violent person, and that allows the state to hold that offender even after their prison terms expire. So this is, this is meant to protect the public from these offenders, but obviously under the Constitution, the state can't just lock people up and throw away the key, even if they are very bad people. So these offenders have a right to have their cases reviewed by the state, and when the cases are reviewed, sometimes if they meet certain conditions, they can be released. Then the state has to figure out where to put them. So as you might imagine, nobody wants these offenders moving in next door to them. So this has created problems when judges, who up to now were allowed to send someone anywhere in the state that meets these certain conditions, now under the new law, those offenders will need to stay in their close near their home county. They can't just be sent somewhere that then has to deal with these people.
Well, and one of the issues that often comes up talking about sex offender relocation is distance requirements. They are not allowed to live within a certain distance of things like schools and playgrounds and libraries, other places where children congregate. Was there any part of this bill that deals with that requirement?
There was, and then there wasn't. Under the bill that passed, it would have waived the requirement that these placements be 1,500 feet away from any school or park or nursing home or some. There are some other requirements even beyond that. I haven't actually mapped it out, but the authors of the bill and people who, as you refer to. These requirements can make it literally impossible to place these offenders in a place that has any kind of population density at all. So that's what was in the bill. However, Governor Scott Walker, when he signed the bill, vetoed that provision of what now is the law. So his statement was basically the same reason for the requirement to exist in the first place, to try to protect people from these offenders. But the problem is that he may have created a situation where the law requires judges to place offenders in areas where, also by this law, there are literally no places that can take them.
We're talking with Rob Menser right now. He's a news editor for the USA Today Network Wisconsin with us for our weekly look at the top news stories in the state. And Rob, we've been talking about the paper industry quite a bit lately, focusing on the closing of a couple Kimberly-Clark plants in the Fox Valley and the industry's downturn as a whole. But there's some good news coming out of the village of Combined Locks that is bucking that trend. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think I have never seen this before, and who knows if it will last, but it's very interesting. The Appleton coated paper mill there, Combined Locks basically is in the Appleton area, went into receivership in the fall and it closed, and 600 people lost their jobs. Then the plant was bought by a used machine dealer, and often what happens, or at least what has happened at other paper mills, is that the new owner comes in and scraps the equipment and sells it for parts, and then the site is empty and no one knows what to do with it. But instead of that happening, in the first months of this year, this plant has started making paper again, and they've called back more than 200 people back to their jobs so far.
Are they doing the same kind of products that they had been doing before it was shuttered?
So they had been specializing in printer paper, which is not the specialty that you want to have in the paper industry right now. And what the owners say and the union representatives that we spoke with said is that the new owner has made significant investments to make a switch to switch over to making a corrugated cardboard, which is the paper industry that you want to be in right now.
And briefly, what kind of reaction are you hearing in the area from residents and from other businesses?
I mean, fairly ecstatic, right? The Outagamie County Executive Tom Nelson said it was nothing short of a miracle. And, so by the end, the company says they expect to have about 300 people working at the mill. That is still a lot less than 600 people who lost their jobs. But compared to nothing or just this place sitting empty, it's a large improvement.
Well, Rob, before we let you go, I want to talk a little bit about Brittany Wagner. She's the new Ms. America, not Miss America, Ms. America. And she recently moved to Wisconsin. What brought her here?
Yeah. Welcome, Ms. America. She lives in Hazelhurst. This is a little Northwoods town, kind of by Minocqua. And she moved here just last year from Southern California, and promptly won the Ms. Wisconsin pageant, and then earlier this month became Ms. America.
And what is she going to focus on as kind of her mission during her year as Ms. America?
Yes, she's been involved with diabetes education advocacy. Her father died from diabetes complications about 10 years ago, and so she's made that her mission. So we can expect, I guess, to see some public appearances or speeches on that topic from her.
Well, and Miss America is the one that's a little better known. That's the more famous competition. What's the distinction between the two?
Yeah, so I have to confess, I never knew half this stuff, but I learned from the story that, Ms. America is for women who are 26 years or older, and also you can compete even if, Judith,
yes,
you've been married or divorced even, which apparently, I guess, Miss America has to be single, which you can infer by Miss, but I think I never actually knew that.
So, Rob, let me get this straight. I could run for Ms. America?
I think you should give it a try.
All right. Well, I'm going to have to look
into
that.
You got some causes.
Well, Rob, thanks, as always, for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
Rob Menser is a statewide living and storytelling editor for the USA Today Network, Wisconsin. He was with us for a weekly look at state news, as he is most Fridays.